Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome again to Strategies of Success. Strategies, again, is something that we all need to practice. We need to learn. We need to manage ourselves when it comes to that, managing the different things that make us successful. And that includes some of those obstacles in life that gets in our way. Today's program, we're going to veer away from the business aspect of success. We're going to go toward the family side of it. And not so much as the family success, it's about managing those family issues that come up. In this case, when it comes to our children, and, you know, as parents, I know that our kids are probably the most important people in our lives. And when something's going wrong, when there are issues at home, how do you separate the home issues from the work issues? You know what? I don't think you really can. It's in there someplace. Can you manage it? Yes, you can manage it. But the best way for you to manage any problem, any issue, is to know and understand as much as you possibly can about that. That is why we're doing today's program. So who are we speaking to? We are speaking to a child behavioral specialist, someone who has been working with our youth for many years, someone who can explain what happens system when you are not with your children, but when other people are with your children, helping them get through their issues, helping them with their behavioral issues. And it's important to know the aspects of any situation, in order to better understand it. This way you could better manage yourself, your reactions, your time, and how you could become a resource to the entire process. Specifically, who are we speaking to? None other than Lisa Navarra. And Lisa, I want to thank you for taking time in order to join us over here and to give us some insight as to what happens with the specialists that are working with our children when we have to entrust those people that we may not know firsthand, we may not even get a chance to meet firsthand, with some of the most precious things that we have in this entire world, our kids. So Lisa, thank you.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me today. I really appreciate your time. I'm very excited to be able to share some of my experiences and some of my knowledge about children and the individuals who love and work with kids. There's so much that goes into really trying to manage everyday life, from just getting by and getting to work on time, getting the kids out, getting them dressed and ready to go with their homework done, and then trying to also manage what might come up as some behavioral challenges in school, you know, especially for those children who really struggle, whether it be academically, behaviorally. So when it comes to working with individuals who are helping our child, so whether it be the classroom teacher or if they have related services such as counseling within schools, or maybe they just they acted out in some way and they were sent to the principal or whatnot, this could either be a regular occurrence for some children, therefore the parents can see this as just another day, or it could be something that could be a shock, and the parents really don't know what to do. But in either case, I have found that there sometimes is a little bit of a bridge of communication or a gap in that communication between the home and school. I think that when schools and parents really work with one another to say, hey, listen, you know what? I'm giving you a call today because Johnny left home very upset, and I just want you to know that he might be coming in, and this is what happened. And sometimes just giving the schools a heads up as to what those challenges might be can really begin to set a foundation for success for that child for the day, because now the appropriate structure can be set. And, you know, something else in mind, too, is that lots of times when children are having behavioral difficulties in schools, parents really don't always know what to do or how to help. And it's okay not to know. I mean, when we first become parents, we learn as we go. So when you add in whether it be conditions such as ADHD or oppositional defiance disorder or health allergies or learning disabilities, you know, now we have a whole nother learning curve that we may not be prepared for. And so it's really important for parents to realize that there are resources out there whether it be in school, if they don't know where to go, they can ask the school psychologist, do you have resources for me? They can go to their pediatrician, whether it be a regular pediatrician or a developmental pediatrician, for guidance. Because that helpless key right there, once they live in that, then you know, parents can become very frustrated and then maybe even resentful or angry instead of productive and working along with schools and schools working with parents. So it's all very much intertwined with one another, especially when it gets to behavior.
Yeah, I can imagine some of the issues here is the, hey, my kid is perfect and, you know, they're not. Or the other side of it, too, is like if the child is having some sort of an issue, it might stem from some issue, some situation that's actually happening, you know, with the parents. So, and I love the fact that, you know, you bring up, you know, the resources that are available, to parents, because that is the most important thing. You know, we go through situations and feeling alone, that's just a bad, bad scenario. And understanding that there are places to go and people to speak to in order to bring the situation to light, whatever it might be, and get the help, you know, that is needed. But, you know, how much of a confidentiality is there? So if I'm having a problem, you know, with my child, then I want to get the help. But if I go to the school, does it automatically become a public issue? And is that part of the record, you know, and that kind of thing?
No, especially if there's a conversation. You're just having a conversation with, you're not having a meeting like a CSE or Committee on Special Education meeting or whatnot. You're just going there to support and see what's going on and, you know, what action plan can be taken, what kind of supports, how can we keep communication open. So it shouldn't be, at that point, it should not be part of any record other than that there was a conference that took place, which was in light, probably look very positive for both the school and the parents that they're working together on behalf of the child.
Oh, but those is. Anytime you could start to vent a problem with somebody that could be a resource to you, it works out. And that's in any situation, of course. So now, but that initial conversation really should take place if you think then that there might be something going on or some, because then you do have all the other services that are available. And the school systems have a lot that they can offer children in a variety of different situations, whether it be a health-related situation or like ADHD and that kind of thing.
They do have some services, and anything in terms of what the schools will provide for services, of course, there's an evaluation process and whatnot, but it should be made clear that whenever these services are provided for the child and it's approved and whatnot and there seems to be a need, a validated need, it's because the behavior in school is impacting the educational process. So if the child is having an issue that's isolated to home and then acting out in school, well, then that really would not warrant, say, counseling in school. That would warrant outside counseling or family counseling or even seeing someone like myself where I can then work through the setting of limits with the parent and the child. So there's a differentiation in terms of what can and should be provided in the school system.
But in that situation, it seems like it's super important that if there is some issues that you think the child is carrying with them, to speak to the school, because the school may not know that there's a problem at home, and they're just going to see that there's something going on. So it seems like it's best if the parent sees something, to actually make that first step and make the phone call to speak to the school to see how the child is interacting with everybody instead of waiting for the school to call them. In other words, the parents
shouldn't
be sticking their head in the sand, you know, and doing something proactive.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that parents would be really surprised at how grateful the classroom teacher would be to even get a heads up that something might be brewing or that something is going on. You know what's wonderful about children is so many times they work through their heart. You know, they act from their heart. They may not always have the ability to say or express themselves appropriately in a verbal way, but they're acting their feelings out. So if we get a little bit of insight as to what they might be feeling, then we might be able to diffuse it, support them just enough so so that way they have a successful day in school and feel really good. And, you know, I always start with any one of my clients, or even when I'm giving professional development or workshops, I always say that behavior begins with perception. It's the way in which we see something and if we're comfortable with it or not. And then perception drives feelings, which then drive actions. So if you're able to understand where the child is coming from, and that school is not the precipitating factor, something happened at home, then you're able to see the perception a little bit clearer from the child. And then you can break that negative cycle and make it something positive where, okay, you know what, I'm in school now, and I know I can go to my teacher, talk to her, or I know if I just come in, I get a hug or do my work and I get praised for doing my work, then I'm on task and I feel really well. That perception switches now of I've had a terrible morning or something negative is going on in my life to, okay, you know what, school's a good break. School's a good place. So with that little bit of communication can come a little bit of support that can make the whole shift of paradigm for a student who's going through some difficult times at home.
It seems like what that would wind up doing, too, is creating a safe environment in the school system so that when the child leaves the outside world, whatever that might be, and they go into the school, they now have people they could trust, and they're building the rapport. So if the parents build a rapport with the teacher, administrators, the assistants, you know, those folks that are helping the kids, that's going to allow them the insight, and they'll be able to better understand what the child might be going through in order to help them on an ongoing basis throughout the day, even just small comments, just little words of encouragement or a positive greeting, anything that would make the child feel that it is a safer and also perhaps even a different environment than what they might be going through at home or anyplace else.
Absolutely. And then with that safe environment, once I get into a good groove of making positive interactions and positive choices, then that's where really learning, if you have a pretty adept teacher with social-emotional learning type skills, then that's where the teacher can actually begin to increase the child's self-awareness skills. In other words, I can see when you're walking in my room what your face looks like. Go take a look in the mirror. What does it look like? You know, and maybe the eyes all crinkled down and, you know, he's coming in, not transitioned in a positive way to school yet. So teaching a child to say, hey, you know what, my face looks pretty mad and I didn't even start school yet. Or, you know, my hands are pretty stiff and so is my body. This is where then the teacher can say, all right, let's take a deep breath. Let's think about something positive for the day. And that's now where the perception changes, the self-awareness changes, and even the beginning of emotional intelligence can be developed, which is so important throughout all of our interactions, whether it be in school or at home.
Hey, talk about the importance of being able to read body language. That's another one. You can bring that into any scenario, right? It's so important to see what the other person is experiencing at the moment, or at least think that they're experiencing at the moment, to help out. Big teachers, where did they get the training for this? You know, my perception is, you know, teacher learned how to actually teach, you know, write the plan for the day and be able to, you know, to deliver that. But on the emotional side, is there a training process, or is this actually something that you've been focusing on to help the teachers understand what body language is, you know, with the students that might be having issues and how to deal with that?
That is a right on point question, because it's very unfortunate that most teachers have not been trained in this to identify all these nonverbal and verbal warning signs and really how to be proactive. You know, Brian, when I started my career, I started it as a teacher of children with behavioral issues, and they were mostly classified emotionally disturbed in a lower SES area. So I certainly had my challenges, and I loved it. My first year, I realized that those around me really did not know how to manage challenging behaviors. I was a first-year teacher, so I had to worry about curriculum. I had to worry about lesson plans. And now I have these kids who are verbally and physically aggressive, you know, and so I was learning on demand pretty much. And I said, oh, my goodness, these are the most, in my heart, these were the most, you know, needy children. They really needed to learn how to self-regulate themselves, meaning control their thoughts, feelings, and actions. So that quickly became a focus point of mine, and that's where I did a lot of research, and I applied it. And I applied it every day for over 20 years now. So it's been something that I've embraced particularly, and then that I really try and train and educate others because, as you referenced before with body language, depending on what study you look at, most of our message is sent through body language, and there's a minimum of 60% of our message without speaking a word that is sent through our body. It's unfortunate that in today's school environment, their main focus is college education and rigorous curriculum, which is you know, fine. We all want our children to reach their potential and do the very best and be prepared. But you know what, Brian? It's been my experience that so many of these children, whether they have disabilities or they're at risk or they're going through, you know, some difficult time, you know, they miss the what to learn, meaning the actual content in the curriculum. So what I did was I actually developed some learning tools that backed it all up. So instead of first teaching the what to learn, I developed the how to learn skills. In other words, what are the skills that you need? And it means that you need to be focused. It means that you need to feel good about knowing that, okay, if there's a challenging situation here or an assignment, what do I do? What are my strategies? So these tools have given them a place to go to refer to through visual cues and verbal prompts. But here's the clincher. I realize that that's not enough. These visual cues and verbal prompts to teach these skills and how to learn were just not enough. I found that kids, even 7 years old, were giving up on even attempting reading a couple of sentences that was on their grade level and just guessing, you know, not using their reading strategies, not using the information that they had. So I said, oh, my goodness, okay, I need to figure out why aren't they applying what they know. Now, certainly it does have to do with some children, neurological and the way that their brain works in terms of trying to get their information out onto paper, but it has a tremendous amount to do with perception. And if you even think about adults and how we perceive things, you know, we give up sometimes if we are intimidated. So I had to back up from the what to learn to how to learn skills to perception and making children cognitively understand that they've got choices. They could give up if that's what they choose, but it's a choice. They need to know they're actively making that choice or that they can try to work through a challenge or an assignment. And they know where to go, and they go to these learning tools. They go to the information. And it's unfortunate that the way that colleges are now, maybe they might have one elective class on positive school climates. They still have classroom management, but it's still, after all these years, focus in on lighting or furniture arrangements, which is good, but it does not get to the deeper level. Yeah.
Lighting and furniture?
Sure. Well, you know, there is some. Yeah. Yeah. How do you arrange
the
desk?
I understand that. Yeah. I only as a speaker, I kind of get, you know, the different rooms should be set up, you know, for different things. But if you're sitting there talking about furniture, the most important furniture in a room is the key, you know, the people that actually sit on those chairs. So I could definitely see, you know, the frustration or the opportunity, and I'm so glad that you found the opportunity in this in order to be able to to go out and speak and train, you know, other teachers, you know, with regards to this. But I just, you know, one would think, you know, that the teachers would learn much more about, you know, how to teach the kid, not the class, but the kid. So, you know, it's great that you're doing this, and you picked a challenging portion of the community in order to do this in, but obviously it's rewarding to you also, and that's great.
Tremendously, tremendously rewarding, and I love to work with the parents. You know, they come to a point where they feel helpless, you know, so that helplessness might come and present that they're defensive or, you know, closed off. But I love to reach those parents, and it happens pretty quickly. Once they feel like you're sincere and you're passionate about their situation and the wellness of them and their child, they start to open up. I mean, I had one parent not too long ago. It was her first session, and after 45 minutes, she goes, "I can't believe how much I've learned already." You know, and it has a lot to do with the nonverbals and feeling validated. And, I mean, who doesn't want to feel validated and understood, you know?
Oh, yeah, everybody does. And the fact that nobody wants to feel alone, you know, it's something, you know, that my family had gone through, you know, one point in time is, you know, my wife had gotten sick and was like, we didn't know where to turn. You know, but once we found
right.
that place to turn, just people to talk to. You know,
yeah.
We went a little bit beyond that, but at least people to talk to, it makes you feel so much better. And then all of a sudden you could start opening up about different things. You know, now we turn, you know, we're running a support group, you know, for that, you know, for that, for that community. Right. You know,
wow.
So it does turn things around quite a bit. Lisa, we have a little less than 10 minutes to go. I want to share your website and then get into a slightly different aspect of this thing. So your website would be?
Sure, it's www.childbehaviorconsulting.com, and I have my Facebook page, which is Child Behavior Consulting, as well as Instagram and Twitter and all of that under Child Behavior Consulting, so I'm pretty easy to find.
You know, one of the questions I've always had with this, it seems like there are more things, there are more diseases, there are more challenges, diagnoses, and everything that, you know, our kids and our adults, you know, while going through at this point in time, we're noticing things more, or these different issues are coming up more. So what do you think? You know, do you think that we've just become, as a society, we just are understanding why people are falling into different categories, so our diagnoses are getting better, or if we're just, I don't know, we're doing something wrong. It's just more stress in our lives.
It's a good question. It's a good question. Same thing with allergies. I mean, there are so many allergies out there, too, and it just seems like there are so many more severe reactions and conditions and diagnoses that go on. I don't have a specific answer in terms of which population has been growing, but I could tell you that, you know, the autism spectrum disorder is on the rise, ADHD is on the rise, you know, and certainly these conditions have existed. I'm not sure if we really had a label back then, you know, but now that we do, there seems to be a lot more services and understanding that go along with it. And as research continues, then we also have more of an understanding in how to work with individuals, too, as we are, you know, faced with growing levels of these conditions.
And that's probably the most important part of that answer, you know, is the fact that there are more resources out there. So nobody should ever feel alone. There is always somebody with the same something that you have. You know, everybody's situation is a little bit different, but there's always some place to turn to. And it's that you happen to be one of those resources out there where people can turn to. So keep doing what you're doing. It's all good. Some of the things you do are a little bit more on the you know, on the public side of things. You do a lot of speaking, presenting. You have you have your own practice also. So when it comes to the speaking engagements, where are you normally presenting? What is the audience like for that?
Oh, well, it varies. And it's so much fun. It really varies. I could be presenting to teacher assistants or teachers, holding workshops for parents. So I really run the gamut because when you think about it, behavior goes along with everybody, us as adults as well as with children, and how one affects the other. So when it comes to the public speaking, organizations will hire me, whether they hold large conferences out of state or right here on Long Island. You know, they can call me up and say, hey, listen, this is a focus of ours. What do you have? And I can give them a whole host of various topics. And also, you know what, Brian, I really like to be creative for people in terms of meeting their individual needs. And I kind of pride myself on that in terms of sometimes I'll turn around and I'll say, what do you find that your target population needs? And if I think I'm a good fit, I can run with, you know, specific and unique topics geared just for them. So I run the gamut in terms of large and small group workshops to presentations, as well as having my own individual practice. Yeah.
Right. The practice is the one-on-one.
That's right.
You meet with patients, clients, in one-on-one. Patients, clients, what do you call them? Just out of curiosity.
I call them clients because everything that I do is educational. It's not therapy. So I'll get right in there. I'm not afraid of the bad and the ugly, you know. So when I have clients, the parent and the child or parents or children, whether they be siblings or whatnot, will come to me and we'll talk about what it is that their concerns are. I've also created, Brian, what's called an FMA. It's feelings, motivation, and action. And with that, I need certainly the parents, and depending on the age and cognitive abilities of the children, I need them to identify what their feelings are about the current situation. And then what is their motivation for change? And I have them write it out on this form that I have. It's simple and it's quick, but it's focused. And then the A is for action. And as we get along and we go through the journey of replacing negative behaviors with positive behaviors, that's their action plan. So when times get difficult and maybe the parents get frustrated or they start to feel helpless again or, you know, that child is rearing his head again and saying, I'm going to challenge you on this, they go right back to that motivation portion. And that's what centers them. And usually, you know what it is? The motivation is, I want a happy family. I don't want to be yelling anymore. I don't want to cry anymore. It's no good for anybody. So we establish that. And listen, in my office, if the kid has a tantrum, that's okay because the parent and the child are going to work through it and all of us together in a positive way. And then we're going to work on proactive skills and interventions to avoid such escalation behavior again. So we're really hands-on, not afraid of anything in terms of verbal, you know, aggression and how do you deal with it? What do we do? So the one-on-one is a lot of hands-on role-playing and real-time interactions and interventions in an educational way.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. You know, the fact that you're fully interacting, you know, with your clients, with the parents, with the children. So that's really what makes the difference. In my eyes, that's absolutely everything. You know, there are studies out there that do all kinds of things. You know, and it's great to have the information. It's great that the teachers learn how to teach and how to set up the room. But it's that interaction with the students, the interaction that you have with the clients, the interaction that you have with your audience when you are delivering a presentation. That is everything. And I think you hit the nail on the head with that one, too, the body language. You know, how do we know we're connecting with somebody? How do we know what the needs are of somebody? Pay attention to the body language. 60% of how we communicate through the body language. It's been very interesting to take that. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's absolutely terrific. Thank you for giving us the insight into what happens, you know, when our child is going through an issue, a behavioral issue, and the fact that there are places for us to go. And we should not be afraid to call the school and to have that communication, to have that conversation about what is going on. And people, of course, could always reach out to you if they have any questions. And what would be the contact information that you would prefer for everyone?
Well, they can either email me at lisa@childbehaviorconsulting.com or they can give me a call at 631-617-1958.
right. And again, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. Absolutely.
Brian, this
was
fabulous. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have Lisa on over here is because there are so many issues that all of us are dealing with. And when our children are going through things, you know, it does affect us. There's no way you're separating home from work or anything like that. It's always, always, always on your mind. And the more you know about that process, the more you know about the resources that are available to you, the better that you are going to be in handling any situation that comes up. And I just want to let you know one thing. You are not alone. None of us are alone. There are resources out there. There are people to speak to, and there are other folks that are going through a lot of the same issues that you are. Don't be afraid to share your story. That would be one of the key things in anybody's strategies of success. My name is Brian Cohen. Thank you for joining us this week, and we look forward to speaking to you again. You've been listening to Lisa Navarro, and her website is, again, www.childrenbehaviorconsulting.com.